Champion, you fight or die.
Coledon unbuckled his belt and let it drop to the floor as he yanked angrily at his coat and shirt. Once his chest was bared of any hindrances, he bent to retrieve his sword from its sheath. He rounded on Talia.
Since this is the last time we speak, sister, I'm taking the opportunity to say that you are a heartless wench, unworthy of your position, and it would have been a blessing to have been born to any other house.
The man turned to face Rezkin and waited expectantly. Rezkin said, You are prepared to fight a battle you know you cannot win.
She will never let me go,
Coledon said, his pain and frustration obvious for all to see.
If I am to die, I would die fighting.
Killing you serves no purpose, Rezkin said. I have not seen you fight, but I have been told that you are an accomplished champion. I offer you an alternative. Coledon glanced at an equally confused Irisiel and back to Rezkin.
Your Matria has set the terms of the challenge. It is not your right to change them.
He raised his sword in preparation for the duel. Rezkin said, I do not offer as a Lareshi. I am the king of Kyle. In exchange for your oath of fealty, I offer you sanctuary as a citizen of Kyle.
You cannot! Shouted Talia. He belongs to me!
You are welcome to present another champion in the matter of the claim, Matrianera Talia. But this, he said, motioning toward Coledon, is no longer a personal challenge between claimants. I am the ruler of another kingdom offering sanctuary to a potential defector. Any challenge must be issued by the queen, and she must present a champion or prepare for war. Irisiel stared at him blankly as everyone turned to see what she would do. She descended the steps and stopped in front of him. Now that she stood on his level, he towered over her. She reached up to stroke his face as he looked back at her dispassionately. She smiled and said,
He is magnificent, is he not? He stands before the queen in the midst of the Lareshi court and offers sanctuary to a defector, and everyone is too afraid to move against him. I have already stated my intent to claim him as husband, and we have negotiated the terms of our marriage. He has control of the military. If we go to war over this, we go to war against ourselves.
Talia said,
The claim is not yet binding.
The marriage contract has been signed,
Irisiel said, motioning to Selyse, who hurried forward with an apologetic glance for Frisia and Isaria.
But there has been no ceremony,
Talia said,
and it has not been consummated before witnesses.
Irisiel waved away the concern.
Minor technicalities that will be remedied before the morrow. As for this matter,
she ran a hand over Coledon's bared chest as she passed him on her way back to the dais.
Your king has given his guardsmen permission to apply for citizenship to another kingdom. I do not intend to stand in his way.
She stood upon the dais and gazed around the room at the stunned faces.
Besides, we had best put this matter to rest before he makes the same offer to other disgruntled champions.
Some of the women appeared worried as they shook their heads in agreement, and many of the men looked around as if to discourage anyone from getting ideas of defecting. Meanwhile, Coledon dropped to his knees, placed his sword on the ground, and crossed his arms before him. He pressed his forehead to his wrists and muttered a string of words in Lareshi. Two of the few words Wesson understood were Rezkin and Kyle, so he assumed it to be an oath of fealty. When the man rose, Rezkin said, You may join my royal guard.
It is my honor, your majesty,
Coledon said. He retrieved his shirt, but left his Lareshi guardsman's coat lying on the ground. He then moved to stand behind Rezkin's entourage. Rezkin glanced about and said, Does anyone else wish to declare a challenge? Talia seethed at the queen.
You are weak, Irisiel, and you know it. You hide behind this man just as you have hidden behind Cerunius for so long.
Irisiel laughed.
This is why you will never be queen, Talia. I have gained the advantage of the most exquisite weapon on the Cerulean, one that none in this court is brave enough to face.
You think you have conquered him?
Talia spat.
He is a rabid animal. You will see. He will betray you and destroy this kingdom. He has already wreaked havoc in Ashai and Chaneria, and he is not yet done with Gendishin.
She looked around at the crowd that was stunned into silence by her outburst.
You will all regret not killing him while he stands.
Irisiel turned from the crazed woman, smiled to the crowd, and said,
Shall we get on with this ceremony?
A servant hurried forward with a tray covered in black velvet, upon which lay two silver ribbons. Cerunius stopped the servant in his tracks and took the tray. The queen's consort carried the tray to where Ariciel and Rezgen stood upon the dais. Rezgen removed the black ribbon that held his hair in a queue, allowing it to fall loose. Ariciel smiled tightly at her consort as she took a silver ribbon from the tray and muttered foreign words as she wound it into a smaller braid that hung from Rezgen's temple. The silver gleamed brightly in his raven black hair, and her hands began to shake as she tied off the end. Rezgen followed suit, twisting a silver ribbon into the queen's golden locks as he spoke the same words, but Ariciel looked away as if she could no longer meet his icy stare. Both of them turned to view the audience, and Minder Finwy and an older priest stepped up to the dais. Rezgen did not glance at the priests as his predatory gaze roved the crowd and caught on something at the rear of the hall beyond Wesson's view. Whatever he was seeing held his attention for a minute before he moved to scan the rest of the far room. His gaze finally fell on the priests as they were finishing their benedictions in both Ashayan and Lareshi, and Wesson wondered if Rezgen had heard any of it. When the priests stopped speaking, the crowd applauded, although the enthusiasm seemed to be lacking. As far as Wesson could tell, no one in the room was happy about the union, including the newlyweds. Wesson felt a slight tingle of power, and then beside him, Frisha yelped. From her other side, Nanasi whispered,
"Just something to dry your tears before they fall."
Frisha nodded, but appeared incapable of speech at that moment. Wesson was just as surprised as the rest of them. He had been expecting Rezgen to come up with some wild announcement or crazy plan to get out of the marriage. The noise of the crowd had risen steadily as people gossiped about the proceedings.
"Maybe he'll kill her,"
Frisha whispered. Her companions all looked at her aghast.
"What?"
she said with a shrug.
"He does that. Kills people, I mean. Maybe he'll kill her before they, you know, consummate it. Then he can take the throne and whatever he wants."
They continued to stare at her in surprise, and she said,
"I'm not saying he should."
Without even looking their way, Rezgen turned to leave with the queen. A small voice called out from somewhere near the dais.
"Queen Ariciel?"
At first, the queen did not seem to hear, but the crowd quieted as the voice called again.
"Queen Ariciel, I would like to make a claim."
Ariciel paused and turned back to see Selyse standing at the foot of the dais. Everyone moved back to give her space, and she looked around anxiously.
"You wish to make a claim?" Ariciel said.
"Finally." "Yes, I do,"
Selyse replied.
"I want to claim a consort."
Her Ashayan sounded much better to Wesson's ears, as if she had practiced. Ariciel glanced at Coledon and then back to Selyse.
"Very well, Selyse. Make your claim."
Selyse looked at the crowd again and then turned back to her mother.
"I claim Johnnyman Wesson as my consort."
Wesson watched the queen's expression darken and then noticed that everyone was looking at him. Finally, Selyse's words caught up with him. He felt a heavy thud as his heart began to race. He blinked a few times and then said,
"What?"
A firm hand nudged him from behind and Coledon whispered in his ear,
"Best go up there, boy. You are not getting out of this one."
Wesson shuffled past his friends to stand beside Selyse, just then noticing that they were about the same height. She did not look at him. In fact, he was not sure she had ever looked at him.
"I do not understand," he said.
For the first time, the young woman glanced his way. She gave him an apologetic smile and then returned her attention to her mother. Ariciel appeared as if her head would burst into flame. Wesson briefly considered making that happen, and then he pushed that little destructive voice to the back of his mind. Ariciel said,
"You finally claim a consort, and you choose this puny boy who has not even achieved mage status."
Wesson shook his head vigorously. He did not want to be claimed. He had other plans. Selyse glanced at him and then said,
"Yes, he is..."
She paused to search for a word.
"Kind. The Ashayan women?"
She nodded toward Wesson's companions.
"They like him. He is, respected. And he is cute. Like a puppy."
Ariciel's gaze shot daggers at her daughter.
"A puppy. I would buy you a litter of puppies. I would fill this room with puppies. But you do not claim a puppy for your consort.
He wishes to be a life mate. This is good person, not dangerous,
Selyse said. Ariciel stormed down the steps to the foot of the dais. She frowned as she noted with her judgmental gaze that Wesson was a hair shorter. She said,
Selyse, you need someone dangerous for your consort. You need a champion who can protect you and your interests. There is an entire yard of police guards who would fight to be your consort. Do not choose this boy who cannot even finish his spells.
Selyse dropped her gaze to the floor, and Wesson felt a breath of relief that her mother had gotten through to her, even if it was at his expense.
I choose Wesson,
she muttered without looking at her mother. Ariciel fumed at her daughter, and then turned her heated gaze on him.
Do you accept her claim?
She snapped.
No, Wesson said. No, I do not want to be claimed. I already have someone.
You are married?
Ariciel said, apparently relieved. Selyse looked up at him in alarm.
Well, no, but I want to marry her.
Then you are betrothed,
Ariciel said, and he wondered if she would accept it in lieu of marriage. Unfortunately, they would know if he was lying.
No,
Ariciel sighed.
But you will be.
Probably not, he said with defeat. She's most likely already married by now.
Ariciel closed her eyes and then turned to glare at Rezkin, as if blaming him. Rezkin, however, was smiling for the first time since he had caused the disquiet the previous night. It was not the smirk he sometimes wore, but a broad grin, and laughter danced in his blue gaze. Panic took over, and Wesson blurted,
You think this is funny?
Rezkin laughed. He actually laughed, and Wesson nearly blasted him with a fireball.
I am sorry, journeyman, but yes, this is funny. The woman wants a puppy, so she chooses you.
Wesson noticed that others were beginning to look at him suspiciously, and he wondered why Rezkin would make such a spectacle. Rezkin never did anything without a purpose. Ariciel was staring at Rezkin as if seeing him for the first time. She shook herself from the trance and gazed around the room.
Someone may choose to challenge the claim.
Coming from her lips, it almost sounded like an order. Wesson began to worry as people whispered and nudged each other. Ariciel looked down at him and said,
It is obvious he cannot win a challenge. It would be an easy win.
No,
said Selyse.
No one wants him like I do.
She looked at the crowd in a panic.
Please do not take him from me.
Coledon stepped forward. He pointed at Wesson and said,
I will stand as champion against any challengers for Selyse's claim on this man.
Those who looked as if they might challenge the claim stood back, and the whispers died. Selyse beamed up at Coledon, and then took Wesson's hand with girlish glee. Wesson stared at her in amazement. Ariciel tromped up the steps and hissed at Rezkin.
Come, husband. We must consummate our marriage. We will discuss this later.
Rezkin grinned at Wesson and then turned to follow Ariciel without as much as a glance for Frisia. Wesson wanted to feel bad for her, but he had problems of his own. It seemed like Rezkin had thrown him to the wolves just to get under Ariciel's skin. Well, not wolves, just one wolf. Or maybe she was more like a fox. He looked into the large brown eyes that glowed with happiness. Definitely a fox. He wondered if Mage Threl might use her spell to prevent his tears. Ariciel stormed through the corridors, not even pretending to be a happily married woman. Rezkin figured her open display of disgust could be blamed on Selyse's decision and not on the fact that she wanted nothing to do with him. He briefly wondered if he could make her angry enough to reject the consummation altogether. He chided himself for the wistful thought. He had decided the farce of a marriage was a small price for an army, and Bilior had been most adamant about reminding him of their deal. Armies were not easily gotten, and according to the Fae, demons were on the rise.
You laughed,
Ariciel shouted as she stumped through her suite. Cerunius closed the doors and leaned back against them. The man's mood appeared to be somewhere between stormy and somber, but Ariciel was all tempest.
How could you laugh at that? She said. My daughter chose the weakest, puniest, prettiest little boy in the kingdom.
He is not a little boy, Rezkin said blandly as he took a seat on the settee. He is 18, same as Selyse. He smirked and met her gaze. He is less than a year younger than I, your husband. Ariciel's face heated as she looked to Cerunius for support. None was forthcoming. She looked back at him.
You are more than a man. I do not know what you are, but none could mistake you for a boy. Everyone in this kingdom quakes at your feet. No one would think twice about running over the journeyman. Selyse has enemies. My enemies.
And a mother who would have her killed, Rezkin said.
I was not trying to have her killed. She was collateral damage, and I do not believe he would have gone that far.
Rezkin hummed as he reclined on the plush seat. I would think you a terror if I had not been trained by worse. The difference, however, is that I was taught to defend myself from my enemies, whereas Selyse was left to survive on her own. She likely has more strength than you realize, and intuition as well. I have not sensed her use of talent. I wonder if she is a truth-seeker.
What makes you say that?
Ariciel said. Sit down and relax, wife. Your daughter chose the most dangerous man in that room, perhaps in this kingdom. Besides me, of course. Although she may withdraw her claim once she learns of it. Ariciel abruptly sat on the sofa across from him and said,
What are you talking about? He is only a journeyman. A failed life mage.
Rezkin shook his head. Do you really think I would come with so little strength behind me? It is true that Journeyman Wesson failed as a life mage. That is because he is a battle mage, one with a natural affinity for destructive magic, and he is 3 times more powerful than Cerunius, perhaps more.
You lie,
Cerunius said as he strode across the room to hover behind Ariciel. Rezkin looked to the queen and said, Do I? She did not answer, but reached up to clutch her consort's hand as she stared at him in disbelief. He said, It was Wesson who stood before King Privath with me and fended off 12 purifiers, without so much as casting a spell. If you anger him, he could probably level this whole palace. Rezkin did not actually know how much damage Wesson could do, so he was not lying. It could very well be that the journeyman was capable of such a thing, although it was unlikely. Ariciel suddenly laughed, and then she laughed some more.
I called him a puny puppy.
Rezkin donned a sober expression and nodded knowingly. Yes, you are lucky he has an unflappable resolve. Someone less equable might have set your head on fire.
How did you come across such a powerful mage? Cerunius said with skepticism. And how did you convince him to serve you?
I offered to kill his donkey, Rezkin said. At their blank expressions, he said, That is another story. Let us be done with this. I do not wish to spend any more time in Londoresh than is necessary. Ariciel smoothed the ribbon-like strips of her dress and said,
As much as I would like to make this quick, our laws do not make claiming a husband easy. We must remain intimate the entire night. You are not permitted to leave these quarters until dawn. The evening meal will be served here. It is against my wishes, but Cerunius has insisted on serving as a witness. Vielda will be the second. I do not care for her much, but she is a counselor and a truth-seeker, so she can certify that we have met the requirements.
Requirements? Rezkin said. He had never heard that there were any requirements beyond consummation.
Yes. It is not necessary when claiming a consort, but for marriage, both participants must achieve maximum pleasure. Without it, the bond cannot form, and the marriage will not be recognized.
Bond? You said nothing of a bond. She waved her hand in the air as if it was nothing and said,
I have always thought it a metaphorical bond. I have not met many who took a husband. Cerunius is concerned that a bond forms, in truth, between mages who are married. He thinks the ceremony in which we participated was a kind of spell, and that the consummation and subsequent climax activates it. You are not a mage, though, so perhaps it is not important.
Yes, perhaps, he drawled. Enduring a marriage that would not be recognized outside of Londoresh was one thing, but he was not prepared to be magically bonded to the woman in any way.
Ariciel said, Do you wish to have witnesses present?
Rezkin had no desire to be present, much less have witnesses, But this was one situation in which he was sure to need backup. This kind of scenario had been a terrible lesson during his training, and now he was expected to revisit that lesson with possible hostiles in the room. He suddenly wished Kai were there, or any of the strikers. He might even accept Farson only because he knew Farson had no love for the Lareshi. As a royal guard, Isaria would be his next choice, but he did not think she would appreciate being present for this. Besides that, the other occupants of the room were mages, Cerunius, a battle mage. Either through some nefarious plot or simply out of jealousy, he might attack while Rezkin was distracted by his duties. He needed Wesson. The journeyman was not going to like this assignment, but at least if a magical bond did form, Wesson could witness the event and perhaps design a spell to counteract it. Journeyman Wesson will stand as witness. Chapter 12. Wesson opened the door to the suite, and Rezkin followed him into the sitting room, heading straight for the bathing chamber. After wandering over to the sofa to lay down for a few minutes, Wesson noticed that it was already occupied. Selyse's head popped up as he peered down at her.
"Oh, you are here,"
she said.
"This is so great honor. My consort taken to be witness of Queen's marry night. I am sad you are not here, but is good for house."
Wesson squinted as he tried to figure out her words. He was too tired to interpret poorly spoken a shy at that moment. He rubbed his tired eyes and said,
"Why are you here, Selyse?"
She smiled.
"You are my consort."
He sighed heavily.
"I understand that you claimed me, but why are you here? Why did you not go back to wherever you live and sleep in your own bed?"
Her smile slipped as she worked through his words. Finally, she said,
"You are not in my bed. I come here for you, but you are in Queen's bed."
"No!"
he blurted, then lowered his voice.
"No, I mean, I was not in the Queen's bed."
She thought about her words again and said,
"You are in Queen's bedchamber?"
He ran a hand over his tired face and said,
"Yes, that is true."
He sunk into a high-backed chair and was just dozing off when one of the other doors swung open to admit Raylan.
"You're back? How was it? What happened?"
she said as she rushed over and knelt beside his chair. Wesson groaned.
"Oh, I do not want to talk about it. Ever. I want to leave Lonnoresh and pretend none of this ever happened."
"No, Wes, you have to tell me something,"
she said as she tugged at his arm. Just then, Rezkin strode out of the bathing chamber wearing nothing but a drying cloth wrapped about his waist. His chest and back bore scratch and bite marks that reminded Wesson of the horrors he had witnessed all night long. Rezkin closed his door behind him, and Raylan turned back to Wesson with a questioning gaze. He waved a hand toward Rezkin's door in frustration and said,
"Was that not enough? Please, Raylan, I'm tired. We are leaving in an hour. Let me rest."
Selyse popped up from the couch and said,
"I go put things in bags and trunk."
Wesson was suddenly more alert than he had been for the past 6 hours.
"What? Why?"
Selyse looked back at him as she opened the door.
"We leave. I take the clothes."
"What? No! You are staying here! The Reshi claims are not recognized outside of Lonnoresh. You can stay here and claim a dozen men, and I am leaving."
She shook her head and smiled.
"My Wesson."
She came over to kneel at his other side and said,
"I have finished all training for lessons in lovemaking. I am very good. You will like. I will teach you. You are my consort. I leave with you."
Then she got up and left without a backward glance. Once she was gone, Raylan punched Wesson in the arm.
"Hey, Wes, you got yourself a girlfriend."
"Do you think I can convince Rezkin to leave a bit early? Maybe before she comes back?"
Raylan said.
"Come on, she's cute and it sounds like she really wants to make you happy."
This last she said with a wink.
"I know. I'm sure she is great, but I want someone else."
Raylan nodded.
"I heard. But you also said she is probably already married. Might as well move on."
Raylan returned to her room, presumably to pack, and Wesson fell asleep even before her door shut. The ride back to the ship was tense. With the addition of Selyse and Oladia, they required two carriages. Queen Arisiel and her consort did not make an appearance that morning, and everyone was glad of that. Oladia was quiet. She looked much like her mother, with darker hair but the same honey-colored eyes. She had dressed in a long frock that would be considered acceptable in most places outside of Lanlaresh. Selyse had not. She was wearing a green bustier, a short black skirt that barely reached her knees, and gold sandals with straps that wrapped around her ankles. Since Wesson refused to wear the red ribbon she had presented, she wore it for him, together with the green one for her mother's house. She maintained that she was not yet ready to establish her own house. It was obvious that Oladia and Selyse had somehow developed a sisterly relationship, despite the difference in the way they were treated in their mother's house. They chatted amicably, although Wesson did not understand a word of it. From their frequent glances his way, he assumed much of it was about him. Oladia was otherwise quiet and preferred to stare out the window in deep contemplation over engaging in conversation. To Wesson, she seemed more like a librarian than an assassin for the Adana Row. Rezkin dismounted and turned to assist his companions from the carriages. Frisha would not take his hand, nor would she look at him, and the other women seemed distant as they, too, avoided his gaze. He and Wesson had an unspoken agreement to never acknowledge the previous night, but Selyse wanted everyone to know that her consort had served as witness to the queen's matrimonial consummation. Once everyone was free of the carriages and the ship's crewmen had collected their bags and trunks, Rezkin bade Wesson and Isaria to wait with him and Oladia on the docks. Shazar strode down the gangplank to join them, and Rezkin was grateful for the striker's professionalism. At least he would wait until information was offered, rather than pester him with needless questions. Raylan convinced Selyse to board the ship with them, and she seemed happy to have found acceptance with the other women. After the parade of soldiers and guards finally departed, those hidden in the shadows emerged into the light. The blue-eyed Sikrele smiled beneath her mask as she approached. Her comrades hurried forward to collect Oladia and her belongings, all of which were quickly ushered aboard a small cutter docked beside Stargazer. Despite the presence of the others, or perhaps because of it, the Sikrele spoke in Ferelli.
"You went to great lengths to bring us the daughter of the queen, first king of Lanlaresh. I am impressed. You spent an entire night with the Lareshi queen and survived."
Rezkin was having none of the woman's flirtations that morning. He said, "You have the girl. Give me the sword as agreed." The woman tisked.
"Testy this morning. Perhaps you are grumpy because you were forced to leave your matrimonial bed so soon."
She lost her playful demeanor.
"We do not have the sword. The deal was for us to tell you where it is."
"And?" Rezkin snapped.
"King Moldovan has it. It was he who paid us to take it in the first place."
Rezkin eyed her suspiciously.
"Moldovan hates you."
She shrugged.
"Yes, but it does not stop him from using our services when it suits him. If you want the sword, you will have to take it up with him."
Once the woman had departed, Isaria said,
"What did she say? Where's the sword?"
"We go back to Ferel. We must meet with another monarch." Chapter 13.
"Please, do not be angry with me more."
Tirin was trying to pretend to read through the papers on the desk, but he had only managed to shuffle them into disarray. He finally gave up and looked at her.
"Ilanette, you effectively kidnapped our future queen."
She shook her head vigorously.
"No, no, she is with the king. She went to him with will."
"Willingly," he said.
"Yes, willingly."
"Except that it does not appear that she went willingly. She did not walk aboard the ship and bed down in a cozy bunk. Where is she, Ilanette?"
She is surely with him now. There are weeks gone."
He slammed his fist onto the desk.
"She was wrapped in an illusion that you made and locked in a warded trunk. If you had learned anything about your power, you would know that an illusion spell can have disastrous consequences on a person if not made correctly. But you, a novice, just come into her powers, put an illusion on the queen." He might never be able to find her.
But Lass...
Let us both hope he is as trustworthy as you claim.
Her doubtful expression was not encouraging.
Please, Lord Tyrion, I do not wish to be placed in my room more.
You are remanded to your room until Frisia has returned safely. This is the problem. We have all been treating you like a grown woman, but you are still only a child.
Having remained silent to this point, Brant said,
Perhaps you should take that into consideration. She is still a child, and she is Frisia's friend. She thought she was helping. Frisia is the one to blame.
Tyrion ground his teeth.
Why would she do it?
Ilanet said.
Because she loves him?
He glanced at her. Tyrion knew that Frisia was a romantic, but she had been having doubts about the union with Rezkin.
That is difficult to accept. I think you know more than you are saying.
Ilanet bit her lip.
She says she does not think he is truth with her.
He wearily ran a hand down his face.
Truthful.
Yes, I'm saying truth.
No, the word is... Never mind. You are saying that she went to spy on him,
Brant said.
That does sound like something she would do.
Tyrion nodded and sighed heavily. After glancing at Brant, he returned his gaze to the princess.
Very well. You may leave your quarters, but you are under strict orders not to use your powers except under the supervision and direction of a mage.
Ilanet beamed.
Thank you, Lord Tyrion. I will be very good. I will make no trouble.
You are an illusionist. Your purpose in life is to make trouble.
The heavy pounding on the door had the signature of Kai. The striker opened from the outside to permit Captain Jimson and healer Jespia.
You have returned. Please tell me you were successful.
Jimson saluted and said,
Lord Tyrion, we were unable to find him.
Tyrion's stomach dropped.
What do you mean, you were unable to find him?
We waited in his room for over a week. We surveyed all the local establishments and questioned the locals. He has disappeared. Millens and Maid Yerlan stayed behind in case he returns.
Ilanet said,
You are speaking of Tam? Tam is missing?
Tyrion waved at Brant.
Take Ilanet somewhere out of here.
Wait, no, I wish to know of Tam. Please, what of Tam?
Brant pulled her by her elbow through the door and Kai stepped in before shutting it.
We will need to put together a real search party, said the striker.
Tyrion looked at Jespia.
What is the prognosis?
Jespia frowned.
This should never have been done in the first place. By the time we find him, it may already be too late. The human mind was not designed to receive information in this way.
Kai said.
We had no idea at the time that the healer who suggested it was a demon.
You knew the dangers,
she said.
The king wanted Tam to be prepared. Tam wanted to be involved, but he did not have the skills necessary to carry out the tasks without getting himself killed.
Well, that's exactly how he is going to end up now.
We will find him, said Tyrion. We have to. Rezkin's number one priority is his friends, and two have gone missing on my watch.
Bah! Frisia is with Rezkin, said Kai. She could not have remained hidden from him for long. She is fine. Our focus should be on Tam.
Agreed, said Jespia. If we find him quickly, we may be able to minimize the damage enough to save his life. But he will never be the same.
Kai said,
I can go.
Tyrion shook his head.
With the other strikers gone, we need you here.
He tapped the desk and considered his options. He swallowed hard and then looked to Kai.
Send for Conavan.
Farson glared at Rezkin as he boarded the ship. He said,
I hear there was a wedding.
Rezkin met his gaze and kept walking. Both strikers followed.
She's upset, said Farson.
I believe she is in her berth crying at this very moment.
Who?
Who do you think? Frisia, the woman you were to marry until 2 days ago.
What does it matter?
She called it off.
Besides, you are the most outspoken against the union. I would think you would be pleased.
I'm not pleased about you marrying the Lareshi Queen.
Shazar said, The marriage is not recognized outside of Lun-Larish. Yes, said Rezkin, as he ducked through the small doorway to his cabin. Nothing has changed, except that now I have an entire army and sizable navy at my disposal.
I will grant you that, said Farson. This will not help matters with Privath.
Privath will get what he wants, only it will take a bit longer.
What now?
Moldovan has the sword. Shazar said, knowing how much he hates Privith and that prophecy. He has probably already had it melted down and made into dinnerware. Let us hope that is not the case, said Rezgin. Moldovan is a mage. He knows the prophecy is a farce, and is unlikely to feel threatened by it. Gendishan takes it seriously, though, so Moldovan is probably holding the sword for ransom. Captain Estad strode through the open doorway and saluted.
Your Majesty, a man is requesting permission to board the ship. It looks as though he intends to stay, but he travels light.
I will see to it, said Shazar. Rezgin said, you stay. Farson, see the man aboard. Bring him here. Farson glanced between them before leaving. Shazar said, do we have a problem? Rezgin shook his head. Not you. Them. Neither should be trusted, yet they are both valuable. Keep an eye on them.
Them? Who is coming aboard?
The dark-haired man ducked into the room, followed by Farson. He wore a servant's coat, but had dropped the air of subjugation. He glanced around the room and nodded.
Shazar?
Shazar appeared surprised.
Akris? It's been some time.
Too long,
Akris grumbled.
Who is this?
He said with a nod toward Farson.
This is Stryker Farson.
Farson? I do not recognize you. You are too old to be a new recruit. The name sounds familiar, though.
You have likely read it in the histories, said Rezgin. He looked at Farson.
The accounting of the dead.
The remark elicited a scowl from the surly striker.
Another long-lost brother, then,
he looked at Shazar.
What of me? Am I dead too, or just forgotten?
Do not lay blame at our feet, Akris. You are to remain at your post on Cadian's orders, as we're all the deployed strikers.
Akris gave a start.
Some were in far more sensitive positions. It would mean capture or death for them to stay too long.
Indeed,
Shazar said with a hint of sadness.
Rorik is going to recruit those who survive.
It is true, then.
He motioned to Rezgin, who had taken a seat at his desk.
You and Rorik serve him now.
How many others does he have?
Farson said,
you do not sound as if you're eager to join us, and you ask many questions.
I am here, am I not?
You could be a spy, said Shazar.
Akris glanced at Rezgin.
I saw his proof. By the looks of him, I would say there is much he has not disclosed. I saw him put down the Queen's Guard in the practice yard, and now he bears the title of First King of Lonoresh. I'm beginning to believe the rumors. He spreads destruction everywhere he goes, yet those who should be fighting him are staunchly loyal. I would not be fit to be called Striker if I were not wary.
Rezgin said,
I think you overestimate their loyalty.
Most of my allies would kill me if the opportunity arose. The rest are more interested in unseating Cadian at the moment. My appeal ends with his reign.
Akris glanced at the two strikers and then looked back at him.
You are not what I expected. At the palace you seem to think yourself quite deserving. No one deserves to be king, and those who desire it do not fully understand the position.
Akris nodded but appeared suspicious.
You do not seem to think highly of your followers and allies. You believe they will betray you. It speaks of the same madness that is said to possess Cadian.
On the contrary, Cadian is chaos without order. He is madness. I am prepared for betrayal, because it is dictated by the rules 9, 24, 87, 96, 164, and 257.
You are a striker,
Akris said with surprise. Rezgin stood and rounded the desk. He met Farson's gaze before turning to Akris.
Strikers have honor. I do not. Strikers are praised for their service. I am feared. Strikers belong to a brotherhood. I stand alone. Strikers answer to a master. I am the master. Do not mistake me for a striker.
Akris said,
you bear a hardness that is difficult to accept in a man so young.
The ship is about to set sail, said Rezgin. You kneel and swear fealty or leave. This is the only time I will give you a choice. If you choose the latter, I suggest you remain in Lonoresh and accept your new life.
Akris looked at Farson and then Shazar. His gaze lingered on the lightning bolt that adorned the black and green tabard. He turned back to Rezgin.
You are shrewd. Queen Erisiel may have gotten what she wanted, but I fear that somehow you had the upper hand. You may see betrayal everywhere, but I trust in my brethren and in King Bordrin. The fact that I am here speaks to my intention to serve you. I will follow you, and you will take me home.
You do realize, Lord Tyrann, that I do not serve you.
Yes, I know that, said Tyrann.
His voice was a tad weaker than he would have preferred.
But you are supposed to serve the King of Ashai. Rezkan is the true king. Since his Rez has not been trained, you must serve him.
Conavan tilted his head in a manner eerily similar to the way Rezkan did.
That is an interesting tale you weave, but even if that were true, it does not explain why I should do this for you.
I am Rezkan's heir.
But not the king.
Look, Tam is important to Rezkan. If he were here, he would want you to do it.
Conavan chuckled.
If this Tam is important to him, then Rezkan would probably not want me anywhere near him.
I concede the point, but we need to find Tam. He is Rezkan's best friend.
Is that what he tells everyone? The Rez has no friends.
Tyrann gritted his teeth.
Rezkan is more than the Rez. He is not you.
Oh, that one is far worse.
Tyrann paced behind the desk. He stopped to stare at the disturbing painting and then looked back at the most feared assassin in the world.
Tam has only been apprenticing with him for a few months. He cannot fend for himself.
This Tam is Rezgan's apprentice?
Tyrann paused. Conavan's sudden interest triggered equal amounts of hope and concern.
Yes, he said slowly. He has been training him, well, since they met.
What does he teach this Tam?
Fighting, swordplay, said Tyrann. Other things, too. He makes him read everything we have to read. Tam complains about the boring subjects, and I cannot say I blame him. That is the whole reason we are in this mess.
He pointed to his temple.
I told you about the hole in his mind. If we don't get him back soon, he'll die.
The Rez looked at him and grinned.
Tell me about Tamarin Blackwater.
Tyrann suddenly worried that he had made a mistake. On the 11th day, the sun was well on its way to the horizon as they entered the Strait of Bordenay. They hoped to be back on the Sewellian Sea by nightfall. The massive sails were full, and the mages lined the deck to speed their progress. The captain had explained that the surface waters of the Bordenay always flowed eastward into the bay, so escaping was a task. After more than a week out of Kjellin, Frisha had finally found her voice.
How could you?
She hollered. Would you care to discuss this privately? Said Rezkan, glancing around them. The crewmen and passengers were staring.
What does it matter? She said. They all know. You married her. You had just gotten through telling me you would probably never marry, if not for me, and you go and marry her.
Again, the Reshi marriages are not recognized outside of Lon-Naresh.
It doesn't matter. You did it. You signed the papers. You participated in the ceremony. You spent the night with her. She is your wife.
No.
Oh, always the lies. Stop lying and admit it.
Rezkan glanced over to see Coladan watching them along with everyone else. He waved the man over and said, Please explain to her why I cannot do what she asks. Coladan crossed his wrists and bowed to Frisha.
Lady Frisha, the king does not refuse in an attempt to deceive you. It is true that Larishi marriages and claimings are not recognized by the other kingdoms unless the man recognizes it outside of Lon-Naresh.
I don't understand, said Frisha with a pout.
If our king is in Lon-Naresh, he may speak of the marriage freely. Once he has left Lon-Naresh, he may never speak of it unless he wishes for it to be recognized. If he acknowledges her as his wife even once while he is out of Lon-Naresh, the marriage becomes valid.
Frisha glanced at Rezkan.
How would anyone know?
Coladan said.
The ceremony contains a spell.
Ritual magic? Said Wesson.
Coladan nodded.
You do not need to be a mage to perform it. If he acknowledges the marriage, he will be marked and married in truth. It is why he asked me to explain it to you. It would be too easy to slip, and it is difficult to tell what the spell would interpret as recognition of the marriage.
Frisha looked to Wesson.
But spells don't work on him. You said so.
Wesson said.
Do you really want to test it?
No,
she said rather quickly. She looked back to Coladan.
So,
He's really not married?
Caledon shook his head.
Not outside of Lunarish, he said. I do not understand. I heard that you released your claim on him, and you did not claim him at the palace. Please, Lady Frisia, tell me why you are so upset so that I may help to remedy it.
Frisia blinked at him through watery lashes.
I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. I don't make any sense.
She glanced around and flushed upon noticing all the people watching her. Coledon's expression turned sad.
Sometimes Emetria does not want a man as consort, but she does not want anyone else to have him either.
Frisha's eyes widened.
Oh, no! That's horrible! Of course I want him to be happy. I would never—
She stopped abruptly, as if she had just come to a realization. She turned her mahogany gaze on him. Rezkin said nothing, but he hoped that she finally understood why he could not do as she asked. He glanced over at Isseria and said, Where is Malsias?
I believe he and Brant are in their quarters.
Please fetch him, he said.
Isseria saluted, but her expression soured as she stepped away. Rezkin jumped when something suddenly latched onto his leg, its claws digging into his calf. He glanced down to see an orange-eyed cat staring up at him, its ears laid flat and its teeth bared. It hissed, then yowled as it released him and shot across the deck. He looked out to sea, but there was nothing.
Prepare for battle, he shouted.
People stared at him in confusion, and he shouted again.
All hands prepare for battle!
A sudden impact on the starboard side caused the ship to nearly capsize. It listed so far that water sloshed over the railing. Everything not secured to the deck went tumbling toward the sea. Rezkin crashed into an invisible wall just as his feet left the deck, and then Wesson sailed into him. They tumbled into the other side of the ward as the ship righted itself, bobbing in the other direction. Shouts and horn blasts sounded as the ship rocked. Rezkin looked around for Frisia and was glad to see that Coledon had hold of her, and he and Shazar were trying to pull her into the cabin. Wesson dropped the hastily made ward and was immediately catapulted into the air as something again collided with the ship. He lashed out with a tendril of power, securing himself to the deck as he tumbled. He had never cast the spell before, but had seen Za wield it against Rezkin once. Rezkin had managed to remain aboard, but was tossed into the air with the next collision. To Wesson's surprise, he reached out and grabbed the tendril, as if it were a rope of substance and not raw power. People were shouting that men had been thrown overboard, while others hollered about a sea monster, but Wesson and Rezkin could not see anything from where they were clinging to the rocking deck. Rezkin shouted,
Can you make this rope into a net? Can you cover the deck with it?
Wesson thought quickly about the spell, trying to modify it in his mind to meet Rezkin's needs.
Yes, I think so. I do not know how long I can hold it, but you will be the only one who can touch it. Not even I can grab this,
he said, as he waved his hand through the tendril to no effect.
Do it! There, to the mainmast, Rezkin said.
Wesson wove the net of power across the deck, and Rezkin grabbed hold of it. He got to his hands and feet and climbed across it as the ship rocked. Men and objects were sent sliding past, oblivious and unaffected by the net. Once Rezkin reached the mast, he grabbed hold of an actual rope, and Wesson dropped the spell. After tossing one end of a line to Wesson, Rezkin pulled the mage toward him. They both looked out across the sea, but too late. A massive tentacle whipped through the air, smashing through the mainmast. Wesson kept his grip on the rope and was jerked across the deck as the mast fell. His motion stopped when he slammed against the railing, and he glanced back to see that Rezkin had disappeared. Wesson scrambled to his feet, securing his boots to the deck of the ship with tendrils of power. As the ship was jarred, he caught sight of Mage Threl at the bow, lobbing a fireball at something he was unable to see from his vantage. Climbing over ropes and anything secured to the ship, he reached her just as a monstrous creature reared out of the water. Its tough, bluish-red skin was slick around the giant black eye that stared at him right before it lifted its enormous tentacles. Beneath the flailing appendages was a gaping maw filled with row after row of razor-sharp spikes protruding from pink flesh. His heart threatened to burst from his chest as the spikes descended toward them. Mage Threl cast a spiral wave of flame into the creature's maw. The thing stalled and released a screech infused with a putrid wind, but resumed its attack. Wesson knew the end was upon them, and for once permitted a trickle of the macabre joy at his core to breach the surface. He chuckled with mirth as he wove an unfamiliar spell of fire and nocent energy. A thrill drove through him as he cast the dark power. It spread from a single point, an oily black sphere the size of his fist, and each sphere thereafter splitting again and again. The swarm of black spheres struck the sea monster, some sailing past, then turning to accost it from the rear. The blobs splattered against the creature's slippery skin and stuck like molasses. Then they began to sizzle. The creature screamed, and its massive tentacles flailed as its skin bubbled and popped in acrid pustules. Wesson laughed uncontrollably as Mage Threl watched in horror.
No!
She screamed as she reached into the air. Wesson's laughter died when he spied the source of her distress. There, wrapped in a colossal tangle of tentacles, was Rezkin. His sword gleamed in the golden red light of the setting sun as he struggled to free himself from the giant's grasp. Then he was plunged beneath the frothy waves as the creature dove into the darkening water. Mage Threl began weaving a spell that Wesson had never seen used in such a way, a web that spiraled outward from the ship and then sunk into the water.
There,
she said, pointing at the deck.
They're beneath the ship. We must do something.
Before Wesson could respond, the ship began to rise, the hull lifting free of the water, high enough to send a shockwave through them when it crashed back down. Wesson and Mage Threl both collided with the deck and then tumbled into the wall that supported the quarterdeck. Wesson looked up at the orange sky and blinked until all the images of a broken mast and sails became one. His heart leapt as tentacles suddenly surged across the deck. The monster wrapped itself around the ship, and Wesson saw that one of the sinuous appendages ended abruptly in a pulsating amputation that spewed an acrid goo over the planks. He was alarmed that Rezkin was once again missing. Wesson sat up, and just as his head stopped spinning, the warrior came tumbling over the railing on the far side of the deck. Rezkin's chest heaved as he tried to fill his lungs while pulling himself to his feet. He pointed, his sword fisted in a white-knuckled grip, and met Wesson's gaze. He hollered something and then ran across the deck, picking up speed until he took flight, propelling himself from the railing onto the creature's blistered, foaming head. Wesson played the image over in his mind, trying to figure out what Rezkin had said. There, in front of him, for the briefest moment, it was as if the wind took shape. An unexpected gust smacked into him, and he heard it. Rezkin's words carried on the wind. The ships! Demon on the ships! His heart pounding, Wesson turned and nearly tripped over Mage Threl. He helped her to her feet, grabbed her arm, and ran, dragging her toward the rail. Two silhouettes stood out against the light of the setting sun.
The ships, he said to Mage Threl. Rezkin thinks a demon is among them. It must be controlling the sea creature. If we do not destroy the demon, the sea monster will continue to attack no matter how much damage we inflict upon it,
she said.
You saw him. He is alive, thank the Maker.
You did not,
he said, finally looking at her. That was when he noticed the bloodied mat of hair on one side of her head. Her eyes were unfocused, and she swayed on her feet.
Sit down, he said. Hold on to this rope so you do not fall overboard.
As she slumped to the deck, Wesson glanced across the angry waves and saw that Rezkin was clinging to a sword buried deep in the creature's hide while he hacked at the beast with a smaller blade. Then Wesson looked to the two ships. Their sails were stowed, and they had not closed any distance.
They are holding back,
he mumbled, just as the monster grabbed Rezkin and flung him into the air. Rezkin crashed into the frothy water, and the creature turned in pursuit.
He's only buying us time,
Wesson said. He felt sick as the laughter bubbled inside him. He held his breath and then exhaled as he allowed the mirth to ascend. His heart danced to the symphony of destruction that sang within his mind as a spell bred of chaos shimmered in the air before him. He grinned, and the thrill of it pressed him into a fit of giggles. Finally, he whipped his hands forward, and he shouted. It was a terrible sound, a sound of anguish and desire. A silent wave of dark energy cut a scar across the water toward the farthest ship. He could see its crew scrambling, as if it might do them some good. Wards began rising along the ship's bow, and Wesson's laughter grew. The dark wave did not collide with the wards or the ship. It shot straight through the hull with no apparent effect. Wesson released another breath. In that instant, the ship imploded, everything within crushed by a mighty force. When the compression reached a maximum, it exploded in a fiery ball of molten debris that rained ash and glass down upon the second ship. Wesson delighted in the wails of pain and fear that reached his ears on a hot wind. He raised his hands to dispatch the second ship, but his arm was pulled down by a firm grip. Mage Threl used him to draw her weight upward until she was standing beside him. Her face was pale as she wearily pointed toward the frothy water nearer the ship. The sea monster's tentacles had gone slack, and it listed to one side before sinking slowly into the depths. Rezkin floated in the water for a moment, facing the star-speckled, dusky sky, and then he began swimming toward the ship. Wesson glanced back at the other ship. A gleeful smile threatened at his lips, but he wrapped it tightly with his will and pushed it deep into the dungeon from which it had sprung. It was a struggle, and a part of him wanted to let it go, but Mage Threl's firm grip kept him anchored. Then, the aftermath struck him. He heaved into the water as a cry escaped him. He looked at the evidence of his destruction. Where once dozens of men and women had lived, stood nothing but debris. He knew it was unlikely they would find bodies. They would have been crushed and vaporized, leaving behind no evidence that they had existed. Wesson slumped to the ground and buried his head in his hands as he sobbed. Rezkin grabbed hold of the rope ladder someone had thrown down to him. He dragged himself aboard and stood tall despite his fatigue. He still felt as if he were fighting for breath beneath the water, but he could not allow the others to witness his physical distress. His sodden armor was heavy after the long battle, and he had lost Kingslayer, but the monster was gone. Rezkin spied Captain Estad at the helm barking orders. Others scrambled out of his way as he pushed away from the railing and tromped across the deck. They were like ants in a frenzy after someone had stomped their mound, except in one location. Journeyman Wesson sat on the deck with his head buried in his lap, and everyone was giving him a wide berth. Gazing across the water, Rezkin saw the trail of debris that had once been a ship, and he understood. He glanced at Wesson, and then waved to Captain Estad. He said, "Light the flame."
"What does that mean?"
said Mage Threl, who sat beside Wesson, eyeing him warily. Shazar, who had felt it necessary to hurry over to inspect him, answered in his stead.
"They have raised the flag of surrender. We are accepting."
Mage Threl said,
"Our ship is in pieces. I'm currently holding a ward over a hole in the hull right below us. If it is not repaired before I run out of energy, we will sink. Why would they surrender to us?"
"The second ship has been destroyed," said Shazar. "The first is concerned that we will do the same to them."
His gaze landed on Wesson. "I doubt anyone has ever seen a ship so thoroughly decimated, and in a single attack, no less." Rezkin was focused on maintaining a steady breath as his heart calmed. He looked at the tortured mage.
"Journeyman, how did you know which ship was carrying the demon?"
Wesson raised his head but would not look at them.
"I had no idea. I intended to destroy them both. I decided the closest would be less likely to escape if I destroyed the furthest first."
Rezkin nodded. "That was a well-considered strategy, and your spell is quite effective." Mage Threl hesitantly reached out and patted Wesson on the back.
"That was impressive. Where did you learn such a thing?"
Wesson shook his head, covering it with his hands again. No one pressed him. Mage Threl looked at Rezkin.
"You were underwater a long time. How did you survive?"
Rezkin tilted his head and looked at her curiously.
"I was underwater, but I was not. At times, it was as if air surrounded me. I thought you had cast a spell."
She shook her head.
"No, not I."
Her eyes widened, and Rezkin turned to see what had captured her attention. A river of water that had climbed the ship began to flow across the deck in a narrow stream. As it slipped back into the water on the other side, the deck became dry. What it left behind was the greatest surprise. Rezkin strode toward the item with caution. After close examination, he lifted it from the planks and held it aloft. Blue swirls glinted across a silver edge in the last of the day's light. He looked toward Nanasi, and she shook her head again. Captain Estad stopped a few paces away.